taught you chess, Celine?
My dad. My dad taught me to play chess. You know, a rule is that the queen will always stand on the square that's the same color as her, because she'll always wear shoes that match her outfit.
That's an easy way to remember.
I live in so-called Vancouver, British Columbia. One thing people like to point out about this city is how difficult it is to interact with people, to make friends, or find people you share interests with. Earlier last year, I came across a group of strangers who'd get together to play chess every Saturday. I started frequenting these Saturday get-togethers. Another fact about me is that I come from Azerbaijan, a small country that most can't pinpoint on the map. So you can imagine that my curiosity peaked when everyone at this table of chess players perked up at the mention of my home country. I've always known that Azerbaijan has strong chess players, given its history in the Soviet bloc, and generally through the understanding of the uncles who sit and play one another at the park. But turns out, we're known quite well in the world of chess, even abroad. So this is the story of how I decided to dig a bit deeper.
Carrie. Hello, Celine. Thanks for having me here.
Yes. I'm from Azerbaijan, and like most people don't know about Azerbaijan, except if you're a chess player. There's a lot of good players from Azerbaijan. And so I'm doing Carrie is the unintentional mastermind behind the Saturday gatherings, so I thought we'd have a chat. I played against them most, and I've lost to them quite often. Although the day I interviewed him, our game ran well over an hour, and ultimately I had won for the first time in a while.
But I initially got back into chess because of Carrie and his group. And so I was like, I gotta circle back a little bit and come talk to the people who got me back into it.
Well, somebody once said when we were playing, a few weeks ago, somebody said that if you play chess and you could go anywhere in the world and a place you've never been before, don't know the language, don't know anything, don't know anybody there, nothing. Go anywhere in the world, go into a cafe with a chessboard, sit down with a chessboard, set up, and sit and wait. And in a few minutes, somebody will come by and want to play with you, and you'll have a new friend. So there's an element of that to it. And I've met a whole pile of people here that I would never have met before, all kinds of interesting people that I find really interesting to be with and learn things from them and have a lot of fun with them, and that I would never have met before if I didn't have a chessboard in front of me. So,
yeah, to take that just a little further, you can play anywhere in the world. You might not be able to communicate with them because there's a language barrier, but everybody knows anybody who plays chess, the rules are the same everywhere. So that's a great part of it. As far as
it's probably you that said that.
I mentioned it many times, but I think as far as us learning chess, that happens because we encourage other people to go read a book or read this book or do this or do that. We constantly are, because we'd like to see everybody game level come up, not necessarily to match ours, but to make things more a little more fun. And we're just always, I think all of us would like to see a poorer player or a beginner player, like he was just talking about a minute ago, come up. How are you?
Hey, yeah,
like this gentleman here.
I asked him about how beginners tend to approach the game, whether they find it complicated, and whether this atmosphere makes it easier or more intimidating.
I don't think at all about how complex a game. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, if something's not fun, it's not worth doing.
No, you're right.
So I start out, I play little jokes, or I do something funny, make it entertaining, try to anyway, within my little talent. And I try to explain things in a way that makes it seem as if they're having an adventure. And because this is what it is, it's an adventure. You're moving your pieces and you're moving towards your opponent, and you're having this little adventure where the two of you dance around each other until eventually one of you commits regicide. And so I try to make it fun. And usually, people react. They seem to react well to that. You know, I didn't know this game was so much fun.
And so the more he's telling me about this, the more I want to know about the people who come to play.
And I have no idea what to say. That reminds me of one of the people who joined us here. She started here about a year ago, Courtney, who you may have met. And she was a complete beginner. She saw us sitting here playing, and she came up to me and she said, "Can you teach me to play chess?" I said, "Oh, okay, sure, yeah." So I taught her from complete beginner, and she's improved really quickly in that time. And recently, she got a job teaching kids. And part of what she does is she got a whole bunch of chess boards, and she's teaching all these kids to play chess. Right? It's fabulous. Yeah, yeah. And so what Daniel is saying is It's partly about encouraging newbies to play with us, and especially not just old white guys like me, but to try to get more, try to get more young folks, try to get more people, more women, more people from other cultures, and come and play with us, and all get along, right? I mean, if you'd like,
yeah,
sure.
That'd be awesome.
All right, there you go.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
So I've gone there. Okay. What are you gonna do?
But I can't take you.
Yeah, you can.
Oh, I can take this because my queen.
You can do the queen. You can also do the knight.
Oh, how would my knight?
Like this.
Oh. Okay, let me do my knight.
Okay.
Oopsie.
That's okay. So I'm thinking about what Carrie said, how we don't need to know each other's language to play chess. But it's interesting to me that there are a bunch of really good players in a block of the world who can communicate with one another despite there being borders between them. And so I start thinking of the summer I went traveling in Central Asia. I'm thinking about something my pen pal had wrote to me, about the comfort of familiarity when traveling. And I found this in the form of chess. The initial appeal I found in visiting Samarkand last year was that Elif Batuman had once spent a summer there, learning Old Uzbek with her philosophy graduate teacher Muzaffa. She traced her interest in Central Asia to a formula of her given and not so given aspects of her life, being Turkish and being an enthusiast of Russian literature. My pen pal over the summer, Anna, during an email back and forth on travel, had once written to me, "I find there's always a period of alienation in a new city, and then a refamiliarization. Difference/sameness. Both are equally important, and not always totally distinct. Men who write travel memoirs love alienation and being strangers in strange lands, but I think it's equally exciting to meet a new place by walking over and eating at the same restaurant twice, and learning people's names so you can address them the next day, getting familiar and returning." I read this email the morning following an easy allyship with a particular stand in the so-called translated gluttonous row of Chorsu Bazaar. I was often met with, "Hello, where are you from?" or "Devushka, tatkuda?" when walking around Uzbekistan. The latter made me far happier, as it presented the opportunity to showcase myself as a gardash, a comrade in SSRs, far more easily than the former. The only stand that hadn't yelled in English was one run by a family, a short and stout man who ran around collecting orders, collecting plates, bringing customers. His far taller, business-first wife, who would call me Canım, cooked the food and leave the kitchen to collect the money as though she didn't trust her husband to do so. And their shy daughter, who was always clad in full pink attire, a polka dot apron tightly wrapped across her waist, and would laugh when I asked her about whether the tomato sauce was soup. When I first approached, they were really excited to know I was Azerbaijani and left behind any marketing strategy to ask about me, ironically, unintentionally selling me on the chicken the first time. I went again the next time because I enjoyed the food, but more so because I was happy to see familiar faces who would scream, "Azerbaijanlı kız." During my stay in Samarkand, Uzbekistan, I was staying at a guest house with a host who advertised his home as that of three expert chess players. The description read, "The opportunity to play chess with my grandchildren, winners of the World Championships, Asia, Uzbekistan. My children, my grandchildren are 5, 8, 10 years old chess players, winners of the World Championships, Asia and Uzbekistan. They will play with pleasure with the guests, if they wish. When I first arrived, I knocked on the big red gate 3 times and was sure that they weren't home. Turns out there was a bell. Iskandar, 75 or older, greeted me after I had been let in. He immediately started speaking of the space. I can sit in the outdoor seating space and I can use the summer room downstairs. It's usually many degrees cooler than the outside," he said. He also pointed at the miniature Statue of Liberty jutting out at the exterior of the room he will later guide me into and told me very frankly that she is his grandmother. The tidbits of their home, isolated from the guest rooms, that I was comfortable accessing, all felt unintentionally curated to some extent. There was a large poster board at the very front where I had entered into, resembling patchwork in the way the photos are pieced together, with photos of grandkids at various tournaments, open challenges, home chess games. There are only 4 mugs in the kitchen, the rest of the cups for tea being Uzbek tea cups. The ensemble of mugs seemed very handpicked, all of which were chess-themed, with one blasting Tashkent Open 2019 in capital letters. There's a black and white image of someone likely from the Soviet period atop the big letters. I recently asked Iskandar about whether chess has a large role in Uzbekistan. In order to promote chess among the population and turn it into a mass sport in the country, create the necessary conditions for the intellectual and cultural development of the younger generation, organize a system of selection and training of highly gifted youth to become professional chess players and international grandmasters, ensure decent working conditions for coaches, as well as the formation of a chess school in Uzbekistan. There were 3 official orders by the president and 5 decisions by the cabinet of ministers in Uzbekistan, in the city of Tashkent. One of the best chess academies in the world was established, where seminars and international tournaments with the chess world stars are regularly held. There are branches of this academy in all regions of the country. Almost all schools and some kindergartens employ chess coaches of the Chess Federation. The state hosts domestic and international tournaments within the country, provides financial assistance to young chess players to travel abroad to participate in competitions through the Agency for Youth Affairs of the Republic. When I asked about grandchildren, his grandson Madihan, and their start in chess, Iskandar delved in even further. Once, when he was 4.5 years old, we were walking through the amusement park to the rides and he saw several people playing chess. He asked me if he could go watch. I said, of course, just for 5 minutes, because we had other things scheduled. 10 minutes passed and he did not leave the players. I told him that we were late. He asked for another 5 minutes. Time passed, and he did not leave. Only an hour later, when he came up to me and asked if I had enough money to buy a chess set. I bought him a chess set. There were never any chess lovers in our family. At home, he asked to show how the pieces move. The next day, he asked to play with him. A week passed like that. Every day, he set a condition. He would have breakfast, lunch, and dinner if I played 5 games with him. We went to the park mainly to see the chess lovers play, where sometimes he did not want to leave for 2 to 3 hours. In our home library, he found a book by the world chess champion Anatoly Karpov. We still can't find an answer to the question of where this book appeared in our family library. At that time, he couldn't even read yet. A month passed, and seeing his interest in chess, his father installed the curriculum of the world champion Garry Kasparov. Here, in 2 to 3 days, when he learned to use a computer, it was completely impossible to tear him away from chess from morning to evening. After 1.5 months, we took him to a coach at a chess club, and a month later, he was already playing in the Asian Championship in Tashkent. 4 months after he started training with a coach, he took third at the World Championship in Thailand.
Because then I'll lose my knight. So
good call.
I can move castle.
You can move it straight.
Who can move the diagonal? The bishop.
The bishop.
Bishop. No, that's castle.
Knight, castle.
Bishop here.
Yeah.
But bishop needs to protect the king.
I don't know. It's not about that. It's more like bishop doesn't have space to move.
Bishop can move this way.
But how did you move bishop like that?
Oh, that's not diagonal. Mm, you got a point.
While chess seems like an elitist sport to many, most kids in Azerbaijan, in other quote-unquote post-Soviet countries, seem to have the common experience of learning pretty early on. My roommate Fidan and I later learned that we had started learning chess in the same basement in Baku. My brother went to his first chess tournament when he was 9. My uncle, Natik Emmet, started playing when he was 5. He and my mom, who grew up in Soviet Azerbaijan, went to chess school 5 bus stops from their house. It's a strong contrast to how parts of the world seem to discover the sport with a Netflix show in 2020. I think the acquainted relations with this game was what skipped the alienation aspect of traveling in Uzbekistan for me, where I was in what Anna considered to be the re-familiarization aspect for the entirety of my stay. I think this is why I start to get curious as to why we, as countries with similar histories, yet vastly different lived experiences, are seemingly obsessed with the sport.
Say you move your bishop and there's nothing between the castle and the king.
Yes.
You can move the castle and the king together. And you don't want it because...
To protect the king.
But don't they usually like say this. That the queen is the most important piece?
The queen is the strongest piece. Does but that the, make the it king... the most important? No, because even if you lose the queen, you can still continue the game. But you can't...
As long as you're... Because the checkmate depends on the
king. My mom and uncle, who went to a chess school 5 stops from their house, were the 2 youngest siblings in their family. My mom, who desperately wanted to take piano lessons or to try eskrim, was not sent to chess because she was interested in it. But rather, the school was close by, the game was put on the pedestal by authorities, and her younger brother, my uncle, had to have someone take him.
Okay. But I would like to tell. Actually, it started with my desire to go to karate or eskrim. And... my family decided that chess is also some type of sports, and it was closer to our house, and it was easy to go alone with public transportation. That's why I was sent by my family to chess school, which was quite close to our house.
My uncle, Natik Emmet, had a different story. He was a bit more interested.
So for me, it was a bit different. So when I, even before the school, I was mostly staying with my grandparents, and my grandfather loved chess, and I was like sort of good in logics and math. So he taught me chess when I was like 5 years old. Yeah, so when I started school, I lived with my siblings and my parents. So I was interested in chess, and the parents were working all the time, and then I think that was an opportunity for me to go when Hatice decided to go to chess as well. So she was kind of taking me to school every time there was a lesson. The school was not like near us. We still had to take a bus about 15 minutes to go there. So we're going after school hours. I think it was like afternoon, but I don't remember how frequent it was. Yeah, that's all, what I remember.
And you know, they'd go out quite often for two siblings who were either A, completely disinterested, or B, too young to decide their interests.
I think it was twice a week, and yes, it was 50 minutes, approximately 5 bus stop. It was, I think, twice a week. At the time of our childhood, usually kids learn music also earlier, but not all music instruments can be affordable by every each family. But chess was affordable. And that's why some kids started at 4 years old, even before starting writing numbers and letters, they start to play chess. So it was like a tradition, maybe not in every, but in majority of families.
I think one of the more significant things I took away from talking to my mom and my uncle was how accessible chess was in the Soviet period.
We could barely pay for the public transport. Of course, we wouldn't have money to pay for classes. And at that time, everything was free. School, after school, everything. You didn't have to pay for anything.
Actually, up to some ages, we didn't even pay for public transport. For example, Natick, I remember that I didn't pay because it was a small age.
I actually got really caught up in talking to my mom and uncle because I don't speak to them very often these days when I live so far away. So they're telling me all sorts of stories, my mom's going on all sorts of tangents, and my uncle's just laughing.
I was the reason why Natick's chess career couldn't continue. Because we had a competition in our chess school between us. So we had gained some, could gain some grade. And both of us reached grade of 4th. It was a lowest grade. And Natick wanted to continue. But I didn't like chess too much because of my character. So nobody can take Natick because he was too young to go alone. So because of me, he didn't have career of chess person.
In another life, he could have been a grandmaster.
Yeah, grandmaster or something, maybe champion, who knows.
So actually, we had a tournament in the school. And beside Hadija, I also had one other classmate from the school, from more normal school, who attended. And there was one other guy who was like 2 years older than me, and there was a bunch of other people. So I remember we had one tournament, and we played one game with each of the other people, and it was 12 games, and I got 11 and 5 points. Wow. So I only drew one game, and that was with Hadija Pipi. Because I didn't want to piss her off. So I said, okay, let's just throw. I don't want to, you know, get in trouble. I don't remember, obviously, it was, you know, 40 years ago. But I remember that people were like, even my classmate and the other guy, they were like, oh my God, you're so good and this or that. But yeah, like Hadjibibi said, it wasn't, like, I couldn't become a grandmaster being in that school, because even our teacher was not a grandmaster. It was just like an ordinary guy who just played chess well. So I would have to, like, my parents would have had, like, invest a lot of time and money and take me to different competition, teach me. Because in chess, you also have to be taught. You can't just play. You might have a talent, but you still have to know how to play different combinations, different start, different ending. And without the teaching, you will not be like, you know, you will never achieve higher ground.
Actually, I agree with Natik. But I can add that in our class, when we had a competition in our chess school, in our class, Natik was the youngest one, and he got the highest point, actually. And the teacher told that if he continue only 1 month till the next competition, he can get the next grade.
I wanted to talk to someone who has experience on the other side of playing chess. Perhaps a teacher or someone who's dealt with kids or guided people into playing professionally. And so I wanted to talk to my younger brother's former chess teacher, Adil Malim.
Salam. İlk öncə şahmat haqqında hekayəm 1989-cu ildə şahmata başlamışam.
My story with chess started when I was 3 years old. My father was always playing at home or when we visited someone, and it inspired me to play. In 1989, when I was 4, my family enrolled me in chess school. My first teacher was Ilgar, and then continued with Fikret Alizadeh and had many achievements. I am now a chess master and have many students.
İlk şahmat müəllimim İlqar Bacaranı olub. Sonra Fikrət Əlizadə ilə davam etmişəm şahmata. Və bir çox nailiyyətlər qazanmışam. Hal-hazırda şahmat üzrə idman ustasıyam və bir çox tələbələrim var. Nə isə öyrətmək sadəcə uşaqlara, belə deyim, şahmat barəsində, şahmatda artıq özümdə olan potensial...
Teaching something to kids. When I saw my potential in chess, I decided to challenge myself and saw that I can do it. I started teaching 22 years ago in 2003 after I got my master in chess. And then when my first student succeeded in his first competition, it encouraged me even more. That's when I decided that I would teach chess.
22 ildi. İlk tələbəm ilk yarışda, ilk katıldığı yarışda dərəcə normativini topladığı üçün bu daha da məruhlandırdı. Ona görə, yəni bunda davam etməyə də müəllimlik karyerimda önəmli olduğu üçün və bu məni ruhlandırdığı üçün davam etməyə qərar verdim. Azərbaycanlı şahmatçılar bəlli bir yaş deyim. Yəni bizim dövr. Mən məsələn 85-ci iləm.
Azerbaijani chess players in our period, I, for example, started in 1989, of course used the fundamentals of Soviet chess, used that strategy, their line and script. But now in the modern period, it is different. And we chess players that from that era still use the old way to move forward, but we are also considering a new way. So we are moving forward with both styles. So when we say Soviet chess, how did the Soviets and why did the Soviets even begin to dominate the game of chess? The following research, quite fruitful and informative, is not my own. It is an intertwined summary of numerous online sources, written by chess historians and enthusiasts alike. As the Soviet Union was formed, the communist flagship propped up the game of chess in order to re-educate the masses, with means of propaganda in the sense that they wanted to propel forward socialist ideals via the credibility of a game like chess. The state was one of the few, if not the only, to professionalize chess. It was important that this success was tied to the success of a greater system, rather than individual achievements, in order to prove a form of greatness in the ideological principles of the USSR. It's quite important to note that it was really once the Soviet Union formed that the Russian Corps began to succeed at chess. Out of the 5 grandmasters from the Soviet bloc playing the 1962 Candidates Tournament, having inspired Bobby Fischer to write, "The Russians have fixed world chess," only one was Russian: Latvian Tal, Armenian Petrosian, Ukrainian Geller, and Keres from Estonia. It was also the Russians' obsession with France and the French that led to the significance of chess in the Russian realm. Elite Russians would gather at the Café de la Régence, What Micah Tuhi writes to be the European center of chess in the 18th and 19th centuries, the empire, prior to its consumption of the other regions, did not have its own great players, but rather would find the space to play elsewhere, abroad, like France. Now, historians claim that Marx and Engels started to develop their relationship during an encounter at the Regency Café in 1844. These two were avid enthusiasts of the game of chess, which played a big role in the social fabric of the café. Lenin and Trotsky, too, were enjoyers of the sport, propagating the game to be a form of political education. There's a thread that follows chess clubs and social chess, that they were a way of banding socialists together. The role of chess in Russian and Soviet society came to fruition with Lenin, who wanted to nationalize its critical potential, take it from the mold of an elite play to an accessible option for the entirety of the masses. Yet there was much discouragement, given it was still perceived as an elitist activity, especially when organized chess was disbanded after the Bolshevik Revolution. So this is 1917. In 1924, Bilenko, a commander, organizes a championship within the Red Army. By 1935, there are 700,000 players in a trade union championship. The Communist Party found that chess could be refashioned into being a proletariat cause, that the ideology of the state could be formulaic to the success of the players, or at least it could be sold off that way. The game became a headline, a cover of the paper for populating understandings of the Soviet regime as that of highly intellectual. It sort of spirals from there. Players start to attend international tournaments, and those of the Soviet bloc essentially monopolize the competition. About Azerbaijan, do we too have this understanding of chess as significant to our social fabric? Even while being a very small country in comparison to bigger countries, we are known in the international chess world. When we go to international competitions, our players play second, third, fourth. This is because of the significance of our players. Well, Azerbaijan was a three-time European champion. This manifests the waving of our flag and how our country is recognized in other countries. This reminds me of the Soviets during the Cold War.
В советское время, в основном в городах и райцентрах, существовали очень много кружков различного
направления, в том числе и по шахматам.
Я в разное время участвовал в кружках пения, авиаментального спорта и радиосе.
At different times I participated in singing, aircraft modeling and radio engineering clubs.
После распада СССР исчезли дома пионеров.
After the collapse of the USSR, the pioneer houses disappeared, and with them, all the clubs. Individual volunteer coaches here and there worked with talented children. In Uzbekistan, the Talented Generation clubs were created under the Youth Agency, an analog of the pioneer house in the USSR. And now they cover a very large number of younger generations in the dozens of clubs, and not only sports. There are also clubs for cutting, sewing, singing, aircraft modeling, radio engineering, ecology, cooking, tourism, nature and landscape.
At that time, during Soviet period, it was a chance to show yourself to be different, probably, and maybe it was a idea by Soviet to be first in a world with something not only technology, not only arms, but only also intellectually. So maybe from our side, it was really good chance for families. And yes, we had champions, and not only champions, in juniors, we still have very bright people still. It's continue, even after collapse of Soviet, so more than 30 years, we still are great in chess. It's, I couldn't say it's national identity, but even from post-Soviet period, I know that most people are proud to be very good as a country, to be as a nation, to be good in chess. Do you agree with me, Natik?
I mean, I can speak from other perspective. Actually, during Soviet time, the only The only strong chess player from Azerbaijan was actually not even Azerbaijani origin. It was the world champion was Garry Kasparov, and that guy had like a mixed family, like Armenian and Jewish. But actually, he was very well known. I'd like to share a story. It's a very interesting story. You know, about 20 years ago, I was in Indonesia, in Bali. And, you know, our country was like relatively new. People didn't know. So I was like in a, I rented a bus and then with my friends, and they were always making fun of me because drivers always ask, where are you from? And so I said, I was from Azerbaijan. I was waiting for this guy to tell me where is Azerbaijan. And he said, oh, actually, I know Azerbaijan. I was shocked. He's like, and I'm like, how do you know? He said, oh, because I am very interested in chess. And, you know, Kasparov was my idol. Like, yeah, you know, I've been playing chess all my life. And he said that. So it sort of contributed to what you're saying. But during the Soviet time, there wasn't like by republic. It was like the whole Russian thing. So we had like strong players from Georgia, from Armenia, but of course Kasparov was the champion, and everyone who knows anything about chess knows about him. And as for the independence, it sort of remained, but it wasn't like peak. It sort of reached the peak around 2007, 10, 12, where most of Azerbaijani players, they played well. And I think we also won World Cup one time. Azerbaijan team won World Cup or maybe European Cup, but one of those cups. And they were like three, four very strong players. And now there's a new generation come. Those guys are getting old. A new generation is coming. But of course, things are very different now from before. So things that were very popular among people may not be as popular now. Mm. And like Khadija said, people used to play a lot chess, you know, in the families and things, but it's much less now because it's a different environment, different world, different priorities. So, but it's still very popular. I would say it's still very popular in Azerbaijan.
Actually, I agree with Natik. Now it's slightly different. If before it was free of charge and the regular school, I mean, normal education, the elementary middle school was not so long. So till 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock. And family were interested in sending kids to some other activities, which all of them, I mean, actually all of them were free of charge. It was like a really a wide and spread, not tradition, but people used to do it. So art school, music school, chess school, any type of physical sports like football, not basketball, but I mean, fighting, everything like that. Now it's a different. So young people still interested, but it's not wide. It's narrow, and if they have a really aiming to do it. To go forward.
Today they have started to include chess in the school curriculum, but even that is not covered in all schools. Only 20 to 30% of schools. This perhaps expands to a larger scale. I think it will help with patients, their behavior, and generally effectively spending time.
Özlərini aparmağına görə belə deyim. Həm də səmərəli vaxtlarını keçirməyinə görə çox əla bir dərsdir. Dərslər, yeni yetimlərə şahmat öyrənmək əslində uşaqlar
It's actually better to start learning chess at a younger age, perhaps like 5. But some kids start at 3.5 or 4 years old. I even have two students who got their 4th grade level at the age of 4. This helps build their character. It differentiates them from other kids in a positive way. Starting chess at a younger age lets them have their own mistakes, because in chess, even simple mistakes can lead to failure. Standing on their feet, even after defeat, being focused, being patient, sometimes for an hour and a half, sitting at the chess table and thinking about the game, thinking about the strategy and planning on how to beat the competitor.
Diqqətinin olması və səbirlə, hətta 1 saat, 50 dəqiqə, saat yarım bir taxta arxasında oturub oyun fikirləşməsi, rəqibi qalib gəlmək üçün o strateji plan qurması, o məncə 4, 5, 6 yaş uşaqlar üçün böyük bir şeydir.
Salam əziz gənclər. Filosofar Gənclər İnkişaf və Kariyerə Mərkəzi olaraq yeni bir layihəyə start veririk. Gənc Şahmatçı layihəsi sizə şahmat haqqında bütün bilikləri mərhələ-mərhələ öyrədəcək. Başlanğıcda şahmat lövhəsini, onların çəxanadan ibarət ağ və qara fiqurları, ağ və qara fiqurların hər birinin hərəkət formasını, ilk öncə hansı başlayır və şahmatın ümumiyyətlə oyun prinsiplərini hamısını göstərəcək. Bütün məlumatlar, şahmat haqqında bütün məlumatlar sizə mərhələ-mərhələ göstəriləcək. Dərsimizdə sizə şahmat taxtasını və fiqurların gediş formasını öyrədəcəyik. Gəlin isə keçək ilk olaraq şahmat lövhəsi haqqında.
I was recently watching this video on YouTube, Gənc Şahmatçı, online şahmat dərsləri. The first video in the series introduces the game of chess. After finding that group of older folks to play with at a coffee shop earlier in the fall, I had been itching to get better. I had a reputation to uphold because I introduced myself and they knew where I was from and that they were good players where I come from. The video is far more appealing than most other guides because he doesn't smile, he runs you through a bunch of actions and knows you're going to pick it up. It leaves me with a sort of hope that chess, despite seemingly becoming far more commercial, far more professional, and less purposeful in the sense of educating the masses, continues to be something anyone can pick up. I bought my chess board for $5 at a secondhand store 6-7 months ago, and it's quite small. The pawns get knocked over when you try to pick up the knight, but it does the job. It's interesting to think about how the Soviet Union tried to prove itself through what would be considered a pastime, a hobby, how during the Cold War, a wooden board and a bunch of black and white figurines acted like a shield. I have questions as to how this produced a homogenized front, but even more questions about how there are no questions raised as to how each of the republics themselves were trying to put up a front when trying to gain their independence. Was chess a form of nation-making there too? Did each of the republics send their best players to the Russian corps to try and prove themselves? Do we watch YouTube tutorials now to go and wave a flag?
Здравствуйте, меня зовут Фарид Мурватов. Моя шахматная карьера началась с детского сада в 6 лет, но из-за пандемии моя карьера прервалась на 5 лет. И с 14 лет я вернулся в шахматы. Я добился немалых успехов, точнее первый разряд и международный рейтинг, а также многочисленное количество кубков. И всем этим обязан своему первому учителю по шахматам.
Hi, my name is Farid Murfatov. My chess career started in kindergarten when I was 6 years old. But due to the COVID pandemic, I had to take a break for a few years. At the age of 14, I returned to chess. And until now, I have reached pretty good results. First grade, international ratings, and have won numerous cups. For all those achievements, I am thankful to my first chess teacher, Adi, who, without whose support I could not have done it. He was the person who instilled a love for chess in me. It's changed my life a lot. I see my future in chess and I have a huge desire to be a grandmaster in it. Chess in Azerbaijan is not only sport, but a part of culture. People at different ages play it in home, courtyards, cafes, outside. And yes, I personally think that it plays a role in saving and strengthening the national identity of the country, given its deep historical roots in Azerbaijan. Its popularity began centuries ago. I love chess because in chess, everything depends on you. To be more precise, it is deep calculation, patience, and a bit of luck. And because of chess, I've learned to be patient, persistent, and calm. I think today, Azerbaijani chess players have achieved incredible success and continue to show worthy results in the international arena. Many of my friends and relatives are interested, and I continue to share the skill with them. I've become more confident and a deeper thinker.
I want to thank multiple people for supporting with this personal reflection of sorts. It was intended to be a documentary, but ultimately became more of an exploration of the subject. I want to thank my mom, first and foremost, because she helped me from the start, and if not for her, this project would have never come to fruition. I also want to thank everyone in the project, Natigami, Adin Rallem, Iskander. Thank you to Lava for putting together a graphic for this and to Alexei for recording Iskander's bit on such short notice. Last but not least, thank you to Kira and Francis for putting together and facilitating such an incredible radio production program. There's so much potential to liberating ourselves through the sound waves, and I'm happy we're exploring that day by day.
Buyurun güzel hanımlar. Bakın, beğenin. Çit, ipek, mehmet, basta, tapta, her şeyin var.
Bakmış ne güzel o
zaman. Bakın, çoluk beğen her ne desem burada var. Alın, güzel hanımlar.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM's podcast incubation program, Power and Voice. This initiative was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and we'd like to thank them for their support in bringing these voices to your headphones or earbuds or car speakers, however you are consuming today's episode. Thanks for listening, and thank you to the Community Radio Fund of Canada.